You are flying high with Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I'm your host, Benjamin Solak. My draft work at ndtscouting.com, my Eagles work at bleedinggreennation.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. Solak is S-O-L-A-K. I am not joined this morning, Tuesday morning, in the wake of the Eagles-Raiders game by my usual co-host, Michael Kist. Mike's dealing with some family stuff here during the Christmas season. Terrible shame, and so however you display your goodness, you know, whether you're just sending happy vibes, you're offering up prayers, however it's best for you, send those over to the Kist family. I'm sure Mike will be back and everything will be well soon, but our thoughts and our prayers go out to Mike. Now, Mike, very busy on Christmas yesterday, on Monday, was not able to watch the Eagles game, but perhaps that was a blessing in disguise, because my living memory ain't too long, folks. I'm not that old yet, but that was probably one of the ugliest wins I've ever seen for Philadelphia. 19-10 is the final score. A two-possession game does not even begin to really identify, really explain how poor that game was. And not to mention Philadelphia with a 9-point spread, they push to finish the game. Doug Peterson elects not to kick that final extra point, which hurts a little bit. I had money on Philadelphia covering the 9-point spread, but hey, they push at least so you get your money back. That makes me happy. How about backdoor cover? Just adds to the absurdity that was that game. Let's start with the positives, folks. We got to talk fantastic performance by the defense. One of the best we've seen from them, frankly. The stat of the game really is going to have to be 5 turnovers to 2 turnovers. That's really what it comes down to. Oakland won in the yardage game. They won in the time of possession game. They almost undoubtedly won in the field position game. Let's talk about that for a second. In the second half alone, that's only how deep I went, 5 of Oakland's drives started further down the field than Oakland's 40-yard line, less than 60 yards to go to score. Of those 5 drives, 2 ended in punts. 3 ended in turnovers for Philadelphia. 2 picks on the day. Those were by Patrick Robinson and then the key one by Ronald Darby there after the pressure by Vinnie Curry. Huge, huge, huge season-altering pick. Philadelphia's got to go after such a weak performance and go and play Dallas at home for home field advantage. There's a chance they lose that. They're the second seed. They're limping into the playoffs off of 2 losses, really feeling down on themselves. That pick could be massive when it comes to Philadelphia's postseason outlook, and we'll get into the postseason outlook as we push further down in the episode here. But again, 1 pick for Patrick Robinson, 1 pick for Ronald Darby, a dropped pick for Jalen Mills that was simply inexcusable. Jalen Mills has put back-to-back now 2 very poor weeks. We've been alluding to the fact on this podcast that we think he was punching above his weight with his play, and you know that my opinion hasn't changed there. I'm not too surprised that he's been struggling, and you really have to wonder. Rasul Douglas, a healthy scratch last week, active this week, sees some playing time. Mills has been injured in and out. He had to leave for a play or two on this previous game here against the Raiders. You have to wonder if Douglas will see more playing time, if rookie Sidney Jones will be active perhaps for the playoffs, because he sees playing time with the backups week 17 against the Cowboys. So the 2 picks there, and then 3 recovered fumbles, 1 by Malcolm Jenkins, 1 by Rodney McLeod, and 1 by Derek Barnett. I forget exactly who caused which. I believe Chris Long was one of the strip sacks there. Chris Long, fantastic game on defense, and y'all remember, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, I like to rag on Mike. In the preseason, we did an evaluation of 10 players the Eagles had added through free agency, and which was the most important, ranking them 1 out of 10. And everybody's top was kind of Alshon and Ronald Darby and Timmy Jernigan. Those were the top 3. I had Chris Long as my 4th. He had Chris Long as like 7th or something. So I've been telling Mike for quite some time now that he isn't a big fan of Chris Long. He's not he hates Chris Long. Fantastic game. Chris Long currently with a career high number of sacks since 2013 with the St. Louis Rams. He's playing some of his best football for no money, for a team that desperately needs that level of production, especially when Brandon Graham went down. And as of right now, from what I'm seeing on Twitter, no new news regarding Brandon Graham and the injury there. Ankle injury, I believe it was. Brandon Graham was questionable return. I don't know if he made it back out onto the field. Obviously something to monitor. Great news is he'll be able to rest next week, even if he's the slightest bit gimpy. So the 3 fumble recoveries there, I can't remember who forced which ones. I know Malcolm Jenkins had one forced. I believe Chris Long was another one as well. Malcolm Jenkins played a good game, quite a good game. He still makes some mistakes when he's there at the linebacker position. And, you know, Philadelphia got run on pretty handily. Marshawn Lynch ends the game with 95 yards, keeping the 25-game streak alive that Philadelphia has of not allowing a 100-yard rusher, but 137 yards rushing allowed. Derek Carr only threw for 137 yards, I believe it was. 140 is the number for Derek Carr. Oakland ran the ball very, very effectively. And there's reason to wonder why. Now, I think, firstly, Oakland tried to run the ball a lot harder than most teams do. 33 rushing attempts to 29 passes. That is not usually the game script, the run-to-pass ratio you see deployed against Philadelphia. Usually teams want to be throwing the football a lot. However, you saw a very poor Derek Carr, very poor quarterback performance, obviously from Nick Foles as well. Like I said, we'll get there. Derek Carr really, really struggled. He's been having a very rough season, folks. And so it's not surprising Oakland looked in hostile territory to run the ball down Philadelphia's throats. We've always known that yards per game stat was a little bit of a misnomer, because as far as yards per carry, Philadelphia is more a top 10 defense than they are a top 1 defense. Again, in this case, 33 rushes for 137 yards. That's still right around 4 yards per carry. So it's not terrible, but it's not good either. And then Marshawn Lynch, you know, had a particularly good day there. 25 rushes, 95 yards. That's just a skosh under 4 yards per carry. They were very physical. They have a bruising offensive line, even with the health issues. They're good at running the ball downfield, and they did it quite well. Like I said, Malcolm Jenkins still makes mistakes at the linebacker position. That's something that we have to accept, because he's playing completely out of position, but he was flying around the field, doing a great job affecting good coverage down the field, you know, and then he had the strip there. He had a hustle play as well. Malcolm Jenkins, just a key player for Philadelphia all over the field. They were able to move him out of the linebacker position more this game from what I saw just watching it casually. I don't have numbers on that. I don't have, you know, full tape there. And a lot of that has to do with the play of Danelle Ellerbe. And Ellerbe's a guy I'd really like to highlight, folks. He had some struggle plays. It's very worth remembering that Danelle Ellerbe was a free agent for a reason, guys. He was not on a team because he's not a great middle linebacker. However, Danelle Ellerbe is playing better football than they ever got from Joe Walker. That's a very important thing to note. Danelle Ellerbe, quick to read, quick to flow. As an NFL veteran, he's seen it before, and he knows how to trust his keys. He knows when to shoot gaps. He knows when to be aggressive, but he also has enough headiness about him to stay patient, to read play action, read misdirection. He's savvy, and that's a very good thing. Rarely out of place, Danelle Ellerbe, which is wonderful. Now, when it comes to making the tackle, he's less than great, folks. You know, not ideal closing speed. You know, he can shoot a gap, but he doesn't really have those final 1-2 steps of burst to, you know, when the running back is aware that he's there to close the distance and to make a tackle to generate a good angle. That's an issue Nigel Bradham has, though it's to a far lesser degree with Nigel Bradham. Danelle Ellerbe provided the best linebacking play at the middle linebacker position, I should say, that Philadelphia has seen since the Jordan Hicks injury. Crucial stuff, guys. Crucial stuff. It allows Malcolm Jenkins to play further back. Now, you know, the Oakland Raiders scored 10 points. 7 of them came on a busted coverage on a 63-yard reception by Amari Cooper on that sluggo route, right? And I know Mike wishes he was on this call right now. I asked him if he had any messages for the fans, and he just sent stunts and sluggos. This too shall pass. Mike has been doing a lot of work on stunts and the problem they caused the Eagles' offensive line, and sluggos, the issues that those routes were causing the Philadelphia secondary. Both predictions came true against Oakland. Oakland had dialed in quite nicely on the weaknesses there. Jalen Mills gives a 63-yard touchdown on a sluggo route. Besides that, that defense was locked down, and one of the things Philadelphia was able to do is you give up a sluggo route. The Eagles look to be in cover 3, cover 1 there. Single high safety. We talked about this on previous podcasts. You know, you're asking your corners to have deep responsibility when they're playing cover 1 or cover 3. They're responsible for the deep third of their field. Jalen Mills forgets that a little bit too often. And he closes down on that slant route. He's attacking down on it. And Amari Cooper burns him over the top, right? He did not maintain his deep responsibility. You play too high. You play cover 2. You play cover 2 man. And then the corners aren't responsible for the deep area of the field anymore. They can play in the flats and they can play more aggressive, which fits Ronald Darby's play style. And it fits Jalen Mills' play style if Jalen Mills is your guy, the corner opposite of Darby. Philadelphia can only play too high safety if they feel like they can defend the run with a 7-man box. You know, you're not rotating a safety down, making an 8-man box, bringing Jenkins down. He's playing linebacker. He's head up on a tight end. Well, because Jared Cook, tight end for the Raiders, wasn't too much of a threat, Philadelphia felt they could do this. But another reason they felt they could do this is because Danelle Ellerbe, it looks comfortable enough in Jim Schwartz's defense that he was able to execute. Great news, guys. Really, really good news. Now, again, 33 rushes for 137 yards isn't what we want to be seeing as far as the rushing yardage that we're giving up. 4 yards per carry is not what we want to be giving up as a defense. However, again, I don't think teams will rush the ball as much. I think teams will be more pass-centric, which will allow Philadelphia to operate more so in their nickel and dime packages where they're more comfortable because they have much better cornerback depth than they do have linebacker depth, right? You saw a lot of 12 personnel, 13 personnel from the Raiders, getting a lot of tight ends on the field, stacking the box, forcing Philadelphia to bring in their linebackers, which they know they have very weak depth at the linebacker position. But it's great news that Ellerbe was playing that well, guys, because it allows you to play too high, gives your defense more versatility, protects those corners. And you saw after that, Oakland really, really struggled to move the football. If you were following me on Twitter, I got very fortunate. Philadelphia, that first half, no turnovers were forced on either side. And after, you know, Philadelphia had 2-3 and outs to start the second half there, Foles really looked off. And again, we're going to get there for the offense. I kind of tweeted out, let's get an interception, guys. Or let's get a turnover, I should say. And after that, Marshawn Lynch fumbles for the first time in almost 3 years. And he loses it, which is, you know, that's a shocking stat. Marshawn Lynch, very good at protecting the football. He has the fumble there. Or excuse me, that was the second turnover. You have my apologies. The first turnover was the interception for Patrick Robinson on third down across the middle of the field. Then Philadelphia gives it up. Jay Ajayi, working for extra yardage, gets the ball stripped from him. That was a tough situation. On the very next play, there's the Marshawn Lynch fumble. So those two turnovers, it was funny. You know, I asked the Twitterverse, I said, let's get a turnover. We got it, and I celebrated. The Eagles give the ball up again. I said, go get another one, and they got another one. Really, really impressive performance from this defense across the board. Defensive line, very disruptive. Linebacker play improved. Corners, 3 of the 4 played great. If you're upset with Ronald Darby over that one illegal contact that he got called on Jared Cook, I thought that call was a little bit light. You got a corner playing a tight end. I think he's allowed to be physical with him. Darby, obviously, like, big push off. I would prefer Darby stay in his cylinder instead of extending his arms, because when you separate like that, it looks like a push. If you just run into his cylinder, you're just playing physical coverage. That's not going to get called as often. You know what I'm saying? But besides that, Darby played a fantastic game. He played very, very well, aggressive attacking the football, had a key interception, was in tight coverage. Great job attacking upfield on flat routes, on swing routes, you know, attacking, pulling offensive linemen on screen plays, making tackles in open space. Really impressive play from Darby after a shaky performance against the Giants. Secondary played well, McLeod played well, Jalen Mills had issues. Jalen Mills struggled, and it's really worthy if Philadelphia gets long looks at Rasul Douglas and maybe even Sidney Jones week 17 against the Cowboys. So, big shout out to the defense. They won this game for Philadelphia in the same way that the offense won the Giant game for Philadelphia. Hey, if we can get the offense that showed up against the Giants, and we can get the defense that showed up against the Raiders, Eagles will be just fine in the playoffs, folks. This is about finding consistency, making sure the team can believe, making sure they're resilient. These tough, hard-fought games, you know, they drag down on morale a little bit, but coming out with the win is hugely important. And talking about morale, we'll get to that at the end of the podcast. Let's flip things over to the offense. Oh, Nelly. Nick Foles, not as bad, I think, as you may think, but really, 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 really bad in key spots. You know, Nick Foles, the good of Nick Foles we saw featured on the New York game last week. Execute an offense. He can deliver a catchable ball to all three levels of the field. He has the arm strength. He has the accuracy, the placement, and the touch. It can be spotty at times, but he does it, right? That skill, it exists for him. Right, a good pre-snap operator at the line of scrimmage. He can look around and he can identify what sort of coverages are facing him and what his matchup should be. Right, the poor Nick Foles occurs outside of structure. When there's pressure, when his first read is taken away and Nick Foles is forced to create, that's where Wentz excels. That's where he thrives. That's where he blossoms into the top 10, top 5 quarterback that he is, right? Wentz, you know, there'll be games where Wentz just executes the system. He doesn't have to create that much. And those are the games where you have hot takes flying out from analytics heads and film people who are saying, oh, you know, Carson isn't that impressive. Well, you know, a quarterback playing in an impressive offense doesn't make him any less impressive. Doug Peterson has a fantastic offense. And those heads often fall silent. If you don't know who I'm talking about, you can ask Mike. He'll say, those heads often fall silent when Carson creates and operates outside of structure, where he's simply magical. Foles is feeble outside of structure. I kind of likened it to very simply. If Foles drops back, you know, and he hits his back foot, looks to his first read, it's not there, two things happen. 90% of the time, Foles retreats backwards, even if the pocket is clean, which allows defensive ends to now have an angle on him they didn't have originally because his offensive tackles were in a good place, and then Foles ran out of the pocket. And he chucks up a prayer that's interceptable, or he throws it away when he had a check down, whatever. 10% of the time, Foles steps up, and stepping up Foles is very good. Stepping up Foles generates velocity, zips balls into tight windows, has an accurate throw, stays on platform. And all that's good, but it just occurs far too infrequently. And so backing up, backpedaling off center Foles really, really struggled. And so there were plays. I think, you know, Foles executed a nice two-minute drive, bringing the Eagles down the field to end the first half. Jake Elliott misses a 33-yard field goal in very windy conditions. You know, he goes ahead if it hits a 48-yarder later. Jake Elliott better from distance, man, weird stuff. But Foles executed quite a nice two-minute drive there, I thought. In the red zone, you saw him struggle a little bit. Now, we know Coach John DeFilippo says this quite often, quarterback's coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. He says, you know, in the red zone, we like for throws to be face mask or higher, because face mask or higher throws often are protected from interceptions. If you try to throw in the numbers into much tighter windows in the red zone, sometimes you can leave the ball up to be picked off by first-level defenders, right, because there's less space there. Linebackers can jump up and make those catches. We've seen Jordan Hicks with a few interceptions in those sort of situations. So they like face mask or higher throws when they're in the red zone. Now, Foles was too high in the red zone. I thought the one to Zach Ertz, where Zach Ertz got one paw on it, could have been caught. I wouldn't call it a drop, but, you know, Zach Ertz to get one hand firmly on it, it was disappointing that he wasn't able to bring that in. That would have been great. And then the Alshon one was too far behind him. I don't fault Alshon too much for that. Behind catches are so notoriously difficult. Foles very erratic in the red zone. And then, of course, there was the interception. Reggie Nelson picked it off after it was too high for Zach Ertz. To me, that's poor game planning. I'm not rolling Foles out to his left. He's a right-handed quarterback, and he's not good throwing on the run to begin with. That just seemed like a poor decision on my part. Peterson, overall, I thought, called a good game. Some things were confusing to me. You know, quick hitters. Let's get your quarterback into a rhythm. So often, Foles was asked to drop back straight and make reads. That's not a strength. You know, if Doug Peterson excels at opening up the first read by design, figuring out how to attack a defense so as to create an easy throwing window, easy completion, first read. Now, credit the Oakland Raiders defense did a fantastic job of closing down that first read. Very physical in the contact window were the Oakland corners, who were not good corners, right? We knew that coming in. So what do? Well, you shove everybody within 5 yards, and you disrupt the precise route combinations and timing routes that Philadelphia runs. You do this. Much, much, much more difficult for Nick Foles to hit his first read. Now you're forcing Foles to operate outside of structure to go through his progressions. Both of those things he's quite poor at. He's slow through his progressions, and he's just, like I said, he's feeble. He's god-awful when he's outside of structure. So I thought that, you know, there were that two-minute drive sticks out to me because Foles did well down the field, going through his reads, hit the check down. You know, go work through the progressions, come to the backside of the field. I've got veteran savvy. I know how these routes might develop. I know how wide receivers might break. I can hit a couple of good throws over the middle, get to the boundary, pick up some yak, lead receivers. That was great. Red zone, things sputter, no 3 points, and that drive is lost a little bit. So that's why I say a little bit better than perhaps things may have seemed at the time. The problem is so many third downs, so many red zone opportunities, so many chances to just get the ball past the 25-yard line. That entire second half, Philadelphia was buried with their backs behind the end zone, constantly giving the defense a short field from which to have to operate. I mean, how many punts did Johnny Jones have in terribly cold weather? Very difficult to punt the ball well in cold, windy weather. Nothing. You know, no one play where you said, oh, Foles, great play, good play. There's a bright sign. Just nothing that really stuck out as an exceptional play. He either was able to execute the offense, either hit a first read or work to a check down and get some yak, or he was screwed. And that's very discouraging. So we saw excellent Foles against the Giants. We saw bad Foles against the Raiders. Foles is a high variance player, always has been. He's a backup quarterback. He's one of the best backup quarterbacks in the league. You know, he played very poorly against the Raiders, but you cannot forget that he played very well against the Giants. And this offense can put up points with him there. The question is, you know, will they be able to do it consistently? Going back into the tape, I'm very interested to see if the Raiders adjusted their defense based off of what they saw against the Giants. And, like, you know, if Doug Peterson's Foles-centric game plan was wasted, like the changes he makes to the offense were combated by the Oakland defense. And in that conversation, you have to talk about what the running game did for Philadelphia, because Philadelphia's first touchdown drive, I mean, they walked the ball down the field with the running game. I believe the touchdown drive was over 6 minutes long, 11 plays for 58 yards. I've only got two passes on that play. There was a check down to LeGarrette Blount for 3 yards, and then the touchdown was a 17-yard screen pass to Jay Ajayi. A screen pass is basically a running play, folks. You know, obviously it's not, but, you know, you're not throwing the ball down the field or anything like that. And so really it was a run-centric drive. Now what happens there is, you know, that's how Philadelphia clearly wanted to attack Oakland. Poor front seven there in Oakland. A lot of rookies there playing up in the front. Especially the linebackers are quite poor for the Raiders. And understandably, they wanted to run the football against them. Now, the problem with that is, and this is very similar to what we talked about with the Giants, Oakland said, okay, and we're going to rotate a safety down into the box. We've got 8 in the box now. You put a tight end in here, we're going to bring the corner, and we've got 9 in the box now. You know, we're going to put positive numbers in our box so that if you run the ball, we have more guys than you have blockers. And the response to that is, okay, the quarterback needs to be able to either execute the quick passing game, or you need to have enough of a deep threat to force the Raiders to now bring a safety back out of the box, right? You, if they've got 2 safeties deep, you run the ball. If they've got 1 safety in the box, you throw the ball, and now they're screwed. If they do, screwed. If they don't, right? Foles going to throw it. And so, you know, folks may call. I think they'd be wrong too, but folks may call and say, why didn't Philadelphia rush the football more? Why didn't Jay Ajayi get more touches? You know, Philadelphia on the day, only 78 rushing yards. Ajayi with 14 carries for 52 yards. So that's a nice 4 yards per carry for Ajayi. With 21 attempts as far against 38 passing attempts. They lost balance. That's almost 2-1, guys. They lost balance. But the Raiders were saying, you cannot run the football on us. We are going to stack the box. You have to throw it. And Foles was not able to respond. So looking forward now, like I said, at the playoff scenario, Philadelphia has officially sealed up the first seed in the NFC, which, hey, a win is a win is a win, all right? You know, you don't want to know how the sausage is made. It was downright ugly this week. Philadelphia's the first seed in the NFC. They could not be in a better position when you look at pure seeding. Now, as far as momentum goes, they're in a pretty poor position. I recognize that, but it's good that they're there as the first seed in the NFC. Week 17, Cowboys come to town. Question is, does Doug Peterson rest his starters or not? Coming into the game, I was firmly in place. You do not rest your starters. You need as many reps as you can get with Foles and these receivers to generate a rapport, to generate more a connection. But I had a thought during the Raiders game that's given me some pause. I don't know if things can get worse for your offense. Your defense just played great. I don't know if things can get worse for your offense. I don't think your defense is going to play as badly as they did against the Giants. The defense has been playing great all year. They had a great bounce back game. I'm not too worried about them. They've had their 2 worst games of the year become against the Giants. They're not going to see the Giants in the playoffs, so I'm feeling okay. But your offense, I don't think can get much worse than that. Let's pray it can't. What happens if you go out against the Cowboys with your starters and they're poor again? What happens if you go out against the Cowboys with your starters for, say, the first half, the first quarter? You say, you know, just to keep them live, to keep them warm, to keep them in rhythm. They play really poorly. They go down 10-0, 14-0 early. And then, oh, you put in the backups and you lose the game, whatever. Well, your offense is going to be coming into the divisional weekend with a big question mark. You know, there's no way we can win without Carson. We can't do it with Nick. I mean, we were good against the Giants. But once there was tape out with Nick Foles at the helm of the offense, we can't move the football. You know, what happens if Alshon Jeffrey goes without a catch? Again, without a catch. He did not have a catch against the Oakland Raiders. What happens if he goes without a catch again against the Cowboys? You know, he gets 2 or 3 more targets, Foles misses him, he drops one. You're going to be even more dissonant than you are now with your wide receiver. You're not going to generate any positive reports. It's going to be negative reports. It's going to be dissonance. On the flip side, let's say you rest all of your starters. Let's say you say, listen, the injury bug has bit us hard. Caleb Sturgis, Darren Sproles, Carson Wentz, Jason Peters, Jordan Hicks. Look at all those names. We're going to rest all of our starters. We just don't need another injury on this team. I mean, you could say that, but in my head, 2 weeks of no football? That sounds scary, but that could be such a great opportunity to hit the reset button for a team that has struggled against inferior opponents for the past 2 weeks. Right, you do not play live football for 2 weeks. You get 2 full weeks worth of practice, right? And then you get to come out and against, you know, a team in the divisional round, and you get to say it is a new season. It is a 3-game long season, and each game is win and you're in. We got to win the divisional round, win the conference round, win the Super Bowl. 1, 2, 3. Here we go. Right, I would be very fearful of playing the starters against the Cowboys, and playing poorly against a Cowboys team that is still isn't playing great, but has been playing better with the return of Zeke. Defense is starting to get to full health. I mean, what? You put your starters out against Dak Prescott, who's really struggling in his second season. They already feel great. They had an excellent game against Oakland. They generated 5 turnovers. No reason for the defense to pick up any momentum. They're not going to get much higher than they are off of this game. You put that Eagles offense out there and they don't do well, you could really just be signing your own, you know, last will and testament. So I think a long and hard thought needs to be given to not starting the starters against the Cowboys. You go out, get Nate Sudfeld some live reps at quarterback, first time in a Philadelphia uniform. Check out some of your rookies. Let's see Shelton Gibson in action. Let's see Marcus Johnson. How about Rasul Douglas? How about Sidney Jones? Let's see if we can get him some live action, some good stuff. Let's get Joe Walker, Najee Good, Kamu Grugier-Hill, and figure out who we might have to get in at linebacker, who should be our 3rd guy, who should be our 4th guy. Second, you know, string defensive tackles, Bo Allen, Destiny Vail, Elijah Qualls. You know, get some Steven Means out there. We love Steven Means up in here. I love awesome Steven Means. Let's see what these guys can do. Right, and you can figure out that offensive line, that left side of the offensive line, still struggling a lot. I really glossed over the offensive line in my offensive go-through. We'll make sure we talk about that later this week. But you could figure that out as well, because Isaac Seumalo some reps. So to me, I might be resting my starters against the Cowboys. As is our tradition here at Locked On Eagles, our last and final thing we will do is read off some of the best answers to the three-word challenge. As always, at the end of every game, I ask the fans, I say, hey, describe this game to me in exactly three words. Best answers are going to be read on the air for Locked On Eagles. And so my favorite one was actually the first one we got. Rob at Fringinos, I don't know if that's how you say it, just says, please never again, which is very accurate because that game was suffering. For the period of time we thought it could go into overtime, it was just like depressive. Like, I didn't deserve that on Christmas. I did not need that. Dwayne McKinney at McKinney Dwayne says, yuck, puke, barf. Which, yeah, that's very true. I like this one from at Ryan Furness. Ryan says, home, field, and then in quotation marks, advantage. Good point, Ryan. Whoever booed the Eagles going into the locker room 7-7, come on, guys. Team is 12-2 with the backup quarterback. Give them some love. They've been on the road for the past 3 weeks. Don't be booing people on Christmas. Chance Trombley, a regular listener. What's up? At Trombley22 says, wins are wins. Yes, they are. Thank you. Win is a win is a win. We don't want to despair. Michael Cavagnaro at Michael Camps. Defense, defense, defense with a C. What's up, Michael? You from Europe or something like that. That's cool, spelling defense with a C. Hey, man, one of the best defensive performances we've seen from Philadelphia. Let's not lose that in what's overall a very ugly game. This defense killed it. Right, Oakland offense is not great, obviously, but five turnovers is five turnovers. Stopping all those drives that started around midfield, that's impressive. They kept Philadelphia in the game the entire way. They had the interception, like I said, Ronald Darby, a season-altering interception, and then Nick Foles was able to generate just enough offense to kick that game-winning field goal. Shouts to Jake Elliott, man. We didn't say it, but shouts to my boy Jake, my jersey, Jake Elliott, game-winning 48-yarder. He's at home. He's very powerful. Thurman Merman at the Jake Evans X, who actually just left us a wonderful review. Thank you so much, Jake. Long live Kisty. He knew Mike wasn't going to be on tonight. Yep, long live Kisty indeed. Sadman Urameshi at Jeff Houston _ says Foles was drunk. Very real chance. Other Foles related one, Jack Fritz at Jack _Fritz 34, recently engaged Jack Fritz, who's with BGN Radio as well. Good friend of the podcast, Jack is. Says Foles just wins, which knowing Jack, that's ironic, I'm promising you. It doesn't mean that, you know, QB wins is a stat. But yeah, Foles, he walked off the field with the lead, guys. That's the way it goes. Brooks Stevens at Brooks Stevens says Foles scares me. He'll be seeing him in my nightmares for sure. I love this one from Josh Kiramata says only one sluggo. Yeah, Oakland probably should have pulled that one out a couple more times. They tried to, but they did not. At Draft Panthers, CJ says one and done. Stick to the Panthers, please, CJ. Chris Sullivan at Sully _C101. Sloppy, sloppy, sloppy with like 85 exclamation points. Twitter should take away some of your characters, but I agree. Sloppy, sloppy, sloppy. You know, Mike Lacey, who I used to work with at Section 215. One of the greatest guys. Excellent follow on Twitter. At Mike Lacey _215. Lacey is Lacy. Make sure you're following the dude. Just a consummate, awesome dude. We miss Carson. Yeah, we do. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Just me today, Benjamin Solak, at Benjamin Solak, that's S-O-L-A-K. If you enjoyed my solo act here, please, again, thoughts out and prayers to my usual co-host, Mike, dealing with some family stuff right now. But if you enjoyed, I'd love it if you left me a rate, a review, or a subscription, please. On whatever you listen to your podcast, go ahead, leave a rating, review, and subscribe. We only accept 5-star ratings, I should say. That's store policy. I apologize. But those help us out so much. They drum up business. They help more and more listenership. They're the greatest thing ever. Always leave your Twitter handle in the review if you have a Twitter. You enter a chance to win a PFF Edge subscription. That's a $40 value. We use their stats and numbers on the show all the time. I'm sure you'll hear more of them on Tuesday as those numbers, or excuse me, on Wednesday because it's Monday, as those numbers come out. As always, I've been Benjamin Solak. Fly, Eagles, fly. Caw, caw.